Election Day is the first Tuesday in November. You still have time to register if you're a New York resident. The deadline is October 12th. If you're a college student, you can use your campus address. It's easy.
To register to vote online or to make sure you're still registered, just visit www.vote.org. Remember, the deadline is October 12th, and your vote counts.
Vote for me, vote for me. I'm the one you can trust, you'll see. Play your part in democracy. It's election time again.
Hi, this is Adrienne Barbeau. Every year, hundreds of homes located near our nation's wildlands go up in smoke, and that's something which often can be prevented. If you live near forest, park, or wildlands, like I do, take a moment to learn how to make your home or cabin survivable. Go to the internet to firewise.org or write to the Interior Department at Firewise, Washington, D.C., 20240. Take a moment. Save your life and your memories.
Yes, that sounds like a great idea to me. It's just about 6 o'clock, 6:02 actually. We're waiting for the CD player to get ready here. Okay, it's ready. And that means it's time for the off-the-wall theme to begin playing.
Thank you.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
Oh, we just made it in here, too. Had everything all planned out, but then one person gets in front of you. No, they didn't even get in front of us online at the coffee place. They phoned in. They have the mobile app. They phoned in the order, so they were able to get ahead of us. And then, of course, there was a problem with their order, so they had to have a discussion about that.
Well, two can play at that game. And, in fact, we're probably going to we'll buy a whole separate phone just to run the app.
You know, it's funny you should say that because that's exactly what I was thinking of doing when you said, you know, if we had the app, we could just be in out of here in a second. And I'm like, you know, I'm not going to put that on my phone. I don't want to put a Starbucks. Who knows what kind of info they'll try to get out of my, you know.
It sounds like a perfect reason to get an iPhone and make up a fake persona.
Other than the spending $700 on it part, yeah. We'll figure out a way. We'll figure out some way to do this.
Well, we want to be a part of the in crowd.
Uh-huh.
Because that's all we are concerned with.
Well, that's all that matters.
It is.
Speaking of which, did you see the Trump tweet today? This is a good one.
No, I don't follow that individual.
And that is why you don't know what's going on, Kyle. You don't see what's happening.
Better for it.
Are you better for it?
Really?
Are you really?
I am.
Really? Okay, yes. That's interesting. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. What Trump said about 10 hours ago, which I guess would mean that it was about 8 in the morning, the paid D.C. is this thing that the protesters against Kavanaugh were all paid. Yeah, he's got it into his head that they were paid. And this is what he said today. The paid D.C. protesters are now ready to really protest because they haven't gotten their checks. In other words, they weren't paid. What in God's name is this guy saying? We know they weren't paid. They're not paid protesters. But now you're concluding that they weren't paid. So now they really have something to protest. This is the kind of circular logic that really makes me wonder how close we are to the drain. Just spiraling out of control here. Screamers in Congress and outside were far too obvious, less professional than anticipated by those paying or not paying the bills. I mean, you could have a team of experts trying to analyze this for half an hour and getting absolutely nowhere.
What's worse?
It makes no sense at all.
Well, what's worse is the implication that you cannot be active and you can't, you ought not go and be vocal. And that's like the antithesis of our actual system. Anyone taking government or at all learned about what it means to be American, I mean, the right to dissent, the right, the freedom to assemble, especially in your place of governing, where otherwise individuals in high towers would be deciding things for you. You get to play. You get to go and speak your mind, whether it's an email, a fax, or getting in a senator's face.
And that actually is an obligation. I saw, I think it was David Simon, the guy who put together The Wire and all kinds of other brilliant shows, that said also on Twitter that dissent is about the most patriotic thing there is. Dissent is American, and it is. You have that obligation to voice your opinion and to get in people's faces when the occasion calls for it. And you can do that in a respectful manner. It is indeed possible. And I thought one of the proudest moments of this nation in the past, well, a while, was when those two women were shouting at Jeff Flake in the elevator, and he was listening to them. He was kind of forced to listen to them. That's what congresspeople should do, is listen to their constituents or listen to the public in general. I don't know if they're specifically his constituents, but that is part of what you take on when you take on that job. You have to listen. And when people don't do that, that is when you're going against the system. So to imply that anyone who is exercising that right is doing so simply because they're being paid, or that their words mean nothing, or that they're part of some kind of mob or, you know, attack strategy, that is really doing a disservice to the way it's all supposed to function. And I think what we're seeing a bit of a strategy here on behalf of the Republicans, where they are saying that, well, nothing else is working, so we have to make like we're under attack. You know, this whole Kavanaugh thing, that was, you know, white men under attack, children will one day be accused of things. And, you know, it's the scary thing about it is it's working to a degree because people are saying things like that. But when you look at it as a whole, it's really absurd because it was a job interview. The guy was being questioned about things that were being alleged about his past behavior. There was a credible witness. Even Donald Trump called her a credible witness. And, you know, do we listen to her or not? And that's basically how the questioning went. And, yeah, it gets a little hard to handle when you're the accused. I get that. But the questions were not out of line. The questioning was not out of line. The only thing out of line was the lack of an investigation and the attempts to cover up any discussion of it whatsoever.
On top of that, I just can't not point out the enormous double standard, I mean, of lobbying in general. When it's the coal lobby, you know, and all the bleeding hearts for workers and people that Trump can't relate with, you know, he has no problem with lobbying. But here we go. People who are really passionate, who are representing many other people, who are paid not from the coffers of private entities or super PACs, but probably individuals who maybe can't be there. So, yeah, maybe some of the vocal people there are paid, but they're paid on behalf of actual individuals. That's really distinct from a coal lobbyist who wants to go and, you know, have like a bajillion silver mines up in Alaska or whatever, in Anwar, drilling, you know, whatever they're doing, you know, that's fine. And those aren't individual, like, you know, thousands of donors or even 20 donors. It's like, you know, a couple entities and that's it. And they have tons, you know, the means to hire full-time lobbying groups to go. And it's the same for a myriad of industries. I just can't let that go because it's such a double standard. And this administration and that particular party, they have like just been the I guess doubling that they've been exponentially hypocritical and continue to be. It's amazing to watch, but not surprising.
Yeah, I mean you can agree or not agree with the positions being put forth, but to try and minimize, and this does happen on both sides too. To try, you know, people generalize about those on the right, Trump supporters. And it's not always the case. In fact, probably isn't the case most of the time. Basically, people are saying what they truly believe. The question is, are they right or are they wrong? And how did they get to that conclusion? And are you having a dialogue? And that is what bothers me when we skip over the dialogue part and just reach the conclusions or just, you know, have it our way and no other way matters and anyone else is not worth even acknowledging. That's what we have right now locally with our current congressional representative, Lee Zeldin, who is up for re-election next month, only a few days away, actually. And there's a very disturbing trend here as well. It happens right in your own backyard. Look at your representative. See if the same thing's happening. I just found this piece. I was looking for any particular news items concerning the rather close race that's happening right now between Lee Zeldin and Perry Gershon. And I found this story from July, which somehow I had not heard about. I do remember when Lee Zeldin was kicking off his campaign, and he basically invited some heavy hitters of the Trump administration to help him out, people like Sebastian Gorka, And who else?
Sean Spicer.
That's right. Sean Spicer was there. Unfortunately, we weren't able to be there. It would have been fun to go to. But a lot of people showed up, and, you know, not everybody was on board, obviously. But here's something from a staff writer at Times Beacon Record, a newspaper I actually used to work for. And her name is Susan Peretti, and she writes this. In the end, my visit to the campaign kickoff for Representative Lee Zeldin in Smithtown, June 28th, was more about the words I never got to say than the few I did utter before I was threatened with arrest if I didn't leave the premises at once. Zeldin was not yet on the stage when a man in a suit told me I had to go. Why? I asked. He leaned in and spoke into my ear. If you don't go now, you will be arrested. Why? I asked again. Trespassing. Trespassing? Zeldin, my congressman invited me, and I had registered. After finding my name on a list, a man had waved me into the Elks Lodge. three like-minded friends didn't even get in. I went because there were some things I wanted to say to Zeldin. Not in a mean, accusing way. I try not to enter conversations, them versus us, Republicans versus Democrats, right versus left. It doesn't solve anyone's problems. That's precisely the point we're making here. As a reporter for a Long Island Weekly, I often covered election campaigns. I've heard folks on both sides of the aisle verbally abuse their opponents. But at the Zeldin soiree, there was more vitriol and hate rhetoric than I'd ever encountered on the job or as a private citizen. It got to me. I felt sick over it. A Monsignor was asking God to bless Zeldin. And he mentioned justice and welcoming the stranger. For a moment, I didn't feel quite so alone. Compassion, unity, working for peace. As a Christian, I'd grown up hearing those words, and I'm still a believer. But when Sebastian Gorka took to the stage, there were rousing Trump rally-like chants of build the wall, build the wall. And this was less than 20 miles from my home. I looked around the room, but the Monsignor had cut out. I was on my own. Gorka had the crowd in a near frenzy when I found myself shouting, but we are all Americans. To my surprise, a few people nodded in agreement. It was during Sean Spicer's speech that I lost it. Enough of the hate, I yelled. Enough is enough. I went on in that vein for maybe a minute. Nearby Zeldin supporters told me to shut up. For a moment, remembering the way Trump had handled protesters, I worried I would be toppled. Then the man in the suit tapped me and said I had to get out. Pleading for an end to the demonizing would not be tolerated. I never got to see Zeldin and ask him the questions I had come with, questions about crying children being snatched from the arms of asylum-seeking parents, another case of gun violence that day at a Maryland newspaper, and our nation's grotesquely lenient gun laws. I wanted to ask, what will become of the poor, elderly, and disabled, like my 90-year-old Medicaid-dependent mother, if more social services programs get axed, or our water and air, if the Environmental Protection Agency continues to be dismantled? But mostly, I wanted to urge him to follow his heart, even if that means casting votes that might anger the president, the NRA, and his other big money donors. I was going to say, Mr. Zeldin, it's not too late to be your own man. But I didn't have the chance. One of the five men who escorted me out asked why I didn't just go to Zeldin's office. I told him I had, but that I was met by two police officers and a gruff aide who directed me to write my concerns on a prepared form. And I told my escort, Zeldin doesn't hold town hall meetings like his predecessors did. Questions are accepted ahead of time only and are carefully screened. They've never picked mine. More words I meant to say. That is just such an amazing piece. That was written in July by Susan Peretti, the Times Beacon Record newspapers. And it just goes to show you, it's not just Trump. It's happening everywhere. And for this kind of a thing to happen locally, it really... It gives me a very, very uneasy feeling. And Zeldin has this history, unfortunately, of not listening to people that are questioning him. That's why he keeps taking the NRA money. That's why he keeps trying to shut down the Affordable Care Act. That's why he parrots everything Donald Trump says. It's really pretty disgusting. If you try to meet with him in his offices, you won't get anywhere. If you want to have a town hall, it's not going to happen. And I know for a fact that Perry Gershon has been trying to have a debate with him now for months. And that hasn't happened. I think something is scheduled, but who knows? Who knows what will come up that will make Lee Zeldin back out? So this kind of thing is something that has to be challenged. And yeah, when you stand up and say enough, you're not a paid protester, you're a patriot. And I sure hope there's a lot of people out there all over the country who are patriots, who are getting ready to strike back at the ballots. Because that is the voice we have in this country. Wow.
Yeah, get ready. Get ready. I mean, surf's up. This is a heck of a wave. And I think it's really telling that their control is really just to make the supporters at events like that comfortable and make them insulated from the dissent. Because if their supporters hear other ideas, and I got this just watching some of the speeches, because some of the different fake news media, that was covering it had Trump speaking in the background, and you just saw everyone there hanging on his words, hanging on phrases and words that we've heard him say over and over again. I realize this is like brainwashing. They're all there getting their brainwashing. And the framing was great because the correspondent was speaking quietly over Trump in the background, and you just saw all these people wrapped with conviction for their guy. And I realized, like, any interruption to that brainwashing would make them think. It would make them have to, question their own involvement. Mm-hmm. And your story there is, it really illustrates it, that behind the scenes, people who are running these events, who are security or managers or whatever, they will craft and carefully protect the candidate from any kind of semblance, any fissure that would challenge them, and that protects the listeners, the supporters there, so that they think there is no dissent. We are the dominant force, and that's not a true reflection of America. We know that this is a divided country, that this is actually half and half, or closer to half and half, but they don't want you to think that. Mm-hmm. They want to carefully control and protect both the candidate, but really the supporters there, so that their little comfort zone of, oh, we're on the right side of this, or this guy really gets me and he's going to do everything he says or not, I don't know. But the point is, it's to protect their fragile little minds from being challenged and hearing truth.
Okay, but let me just stop you there because, yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. And it's certainly the case where repeating something over and over again makes it true in the eyes of many. But I think when we belittle people, you tell people they're being brainwashed, it doesn't really fly. And I've, come close to giving up on reaching people that have differing opinions. But I do think there is hope. I do think you can reach people if you enter into that dialogue with them. So, yeah, if they shut you down, then at least you can say you tried. But let's at least try. Let's try harder to get to people. And that doesn't mean compromising our ideals in the slightest. It just means assuming they have some kind of, a brain in the first place, and that they're able to understand basic points and making those basic points to them. Because if you don't do that, you wind up like what we're talking about with Lee Zeldin, where he doesn't talk to anybody that does not toe the line. And that is a problem. It's a problem for individuals. It's especially a problem when you're in elected office. You have to represent everybody. It's interesting. I did an exercise over the past few days, just for the fun of it, concerning the Kavanaugh vote. As you recall, it was 50 to 48, I think, is what it turned out to be, because one senator just voted present because the other senator had to go to a wedding or something like that. So that's what it wound up being. So what I did was I took the population of every state that every senator represented. So every senator got half that state's population. Every state has two senators. So basically a yes vote meant half of your state voted yes. Now, I know that's not the way it really goes, because there are certainly people who disagree. Not everybody is on the same side. But when a senator votes, might as well be like everybody agrees. You get two votes. That's it. And if both senators in your state vote for the same thing, it's unanimous. 100% of the state is on board. I know that's not the way it really is. This is part of our antiquated system. So I basically paralleled all the senators in that 50 to 48 vote to see how it lined up with the actual population. And you know what I found out? I found out that if it had been measured in that way, Kavanaugh would not have been confirmed. He would have lost by something like 25 million people. That is how disproportionate it is. And I didn't just use the full population, no, voter registration population. So that is a significant chunk of the population that is not being represented properly. And also, there's another way to look at this, too. Every state, as I mentioned, gets two senators. New York gets two senators. California gets two senators. Wyoming gets two senators. Nebraska gets to all these sparsely populated states get the same representation. So if you take the population of California, the voter population of California, and you add up states that voted for Kavanaugh, certain states in the middle of the country. Do you know the vote of the amount of senators that they got to equal the same amount of population of California was 26? They get 26 senators to California's 2. The votes count exactly the same. Each vote counts as one. But those states got 26 and California got 2. Now, yes, they're states. I know they're different. But the population, the actual number of people they are representing is the same. And that's just wrong because we're voting by acreage. We're not voting by individual. And I know it's written into the Constitution, but sometimes you have to update things. And if you can't update something, it stops working after a while. And we don't seem to realize that. How do we get out of this? How do we ever move past this nightmare of electoral college and disproportionate representation with the Senate to get to a point where we actually are able to ask people what they think? You know, there's a very disturbing case in Brazil going on right now where a populist candidate is on the verge of taking over the country, somebody who admires dictatorship and I hesitate to say this, but is worse than Trump and dangerous. And the country will become a very scary place if he gets elected. But, you know, with populism and anti-foreigner sentiment and hatred of all sorts, it's very easy for people like that to get into power. So they had an election on Sunday, and the election was between all the candidates, but they have what's known as a runoff. If you don't get 50% or more, you come back in a few weeks, and you face second place. So basically, they know how close they are to electing this guy. They have a chance, albeit a slim chance, but they have a chance to pull everybody together from the opposition and defeat this guy once and for all. They know what they're up against. All right, we don't get that. We don't get that kind of a chance. They have it. It's more representational. And while they're not going in a very good direction, it's kind of because that's what the people are pushing for right now, which is always a risk when you ask the people what they think. But, it's a messy business, democracy, but it's an important one. You know, it's kind of scary at times.
Yeah, I'm not that scared. I'm optimistic. I mean, I do think that we shouldn't be fearful of recharacterizing because of the kind of remarks and comments and just scurrilous accusations about liberals from liberals and also from the right. Are we talking about the same period of time? I mean, I feel quite free to belittle. I don't really even think we need older voters that have basically made up their minds. I think there are so many students that are going to be voting and active and by 2020 able to. I really have a lot of confidence because even the conservative students on campuses around the country or, state, I think they're in the minority. I don't even think it's close to half and half.
Conservative students in
who are going to be of voting age by 2020.
Well, generally, if you look at statistics, people with college educations tend to be more liberal than people who don't have. And that's not an argument for not having a college education.
Yeah.
But people take it that way. And, it basically is just the more you talk about something, the more in a particular direction you tend to go.
Yeah. And I just think all this, let's make nice and bring in more of the right so that we can be stronger.
That's not what I'm saying.
I don't think
that's not what I was saying.
Okay.
Don't think I'm saying we need to become more central. No.
Play nice and have discussions and sit around and sing Kumbaya. I don't really think that's where we're at.
No.
Are we in the same country here?
Look, we are in the same country and we do need to get along with people. You know, when we were in Alabama and Mississippi, we had a great time. In Tennessee, seeing the total eclipse last year, that was amazing. We were hanging out with a lot of Trump supporters.
Okay, yeah. And actually, you mentioned this. I made a comment about dumb Southerners. I only say that because I'm from the Northwest, and believe me, it does not take long to get out of Seattle and get really country really fast. I've ridden in the back of a pickup truck in the bed, I'm familiar with cows.
All You have to head south on Nichols Road for 10 minutes. All right, that's all you have to do.
That's right.
No, these generalizations don't help.
I'm familiar. I speak the language.
Uh-huh.
And I really see it in myself and in where I come from. Look, so believe me, there's plenty of hick in my life, and I'll wear that
yes,
with honor.
Embrace the hick, exactly. Not literally, you might get hurt.
Or hillbilly.
Embrace the hick within you.
My inner hillbilly is strong. So believe me, there's no love law.
There is a real beauty in the whole hillbilly. If that's not a derogative term, I don't think it is. But it's just there's something about it that I am just drawn to. I can't explain it. But with that, you know, I feel like there's a bridge, a way to actually converse with people. And, you know, I do believe that most people, I know a fair number of Trump supporters, I don't think they're evil. I don't think they're Nazis. I don't think they want to hurt people. I think given an opportunity with a particular situation, they would do the right thing. They would save your life if they had the chance, and hopefully would save their life if we had the chance. With all those common factors, that is where the discussion starts. And as long as we don't just devolve into a shouting match, we might have a chance of making our positions better known and, you know, for ourselves as well, make ourselves more articulate without giving up anything.
Yeah. And that is something that we need to kind of not forget. Well, basically, bipartisanship does not have to just be in the realm of the political and just for representatives. But that is how stuff gets done. You know, there are valid arguments when you're talking about infrastructure is an easy one, but a lot of issues, you know, there is compromise needs to be reached, and people from different perspectives bring the concerns to the table that others might not think of, and that can work anywhere. So, yeah, I mean, I would love to be related and find common ground, and am optimistic for that in whatever kind of problem solving it is. But if my distinct opinion and amalgamation of my views is a non-starter for you, then I don't want to hear it.
No, definitely, definitely true. You know, you might believe that the Yankees are a good team. But you have to understand that the Red Sox, after beating them 16-1 yesterday, are pretty good as well. If you can come to the same understanding that, you know, there's good points to be made on either side, you might actually have a civil conversation. Or you might just break beer bottles over each other's heads. You know, it's your choice which way you want to go. But I like to go for civility to a degree. I don't want to be so polite that, you know, I wind up hurting myself. For instance, what our esteemed Senator Chuck Schumer is proposing is idiotic, and he's a Democrat, but I'm not afraid to say that. Basically, saying that one of the first things he wants to do if the Senate, if Democrats regain control of the Senate, is to put back the rule that makes it so that you need 60 votes for voting in a Supreme Court justice. Which, you know, I understand. I understand the logic behind that, how you want to do the right thing. But it's stupid because right away you give away your power that you just won back, and the Republicans can block everything again. And don't think that when they regain power sometime in the future, they're not going to put it right back to 50 again so that they continue to have this unprecedented power. Let's play smart. You know, it's not always doing the right thing morally. But, you know, it's politics. It's not supposed to be that way.
Indeed. Yeah. And I would just reiterate the best things that, you know, you don't want people to walk away from the conversation or the table with, you know, unhappy with how things went. The best things that we've been able to come together on and move ahead, the things that have been developed either regionally or nationally come from that, like, spirit of bipartisanship. So that could be right in your neighborhood. You know, I'm not saying go knock on the first conservative's door you see or liberal you see, whatever they do, walking slack lines or hanging up macrame hammocks or whatever. But, you know, try to see from other people's points of view and demand that from your leadership. And these incidents where, you know, a leader's just speaking to their sweetheart group and kicking people out who want to speak to them. I mean, that is balderdash. Don't allow that.
They lost 16-1 in New York, too. That's the thing that's really...
Yeah, 27. That's all you get. You're done, New York. It's Mariners season.
So embarrassing. Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. I found something else on that Zeldin story I was just mentioning, because apparently there was more news coverage. I don't know how I missed this, because I'm following this and I didn't see this. But apparently the person that we read the piece from was not the only person ejected. Now, you may say, what an unprofessional way for a reporter to act, shouting out things. Well, actually, she wasn't there as a reporter. It looks like she was there as a citizen, which, you know, reporters are people, too. They have every right to attend events as citizens. But two members of the local press were also kicked out of the June 28th event after that attendee in their vicinity vocally decried one of Lee Zeldin's controversial featured speakers, former White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer. Pat Biancanilio, editor of the site Smithtown Matters, was one of the journalists removed from the event. I asked, why do I have to leave? There was no reason given. According to Chris Boyle, communications director for Zeldin's 2018 campaign for Congress, a protester made an outburst that created a disturbance in the middle of the rally, causing the congressman's security team to react. Okay, think about that for a second. Simply objecting to something that one of your guest speakers is saying something like, stop the hatred, we're all Americans. That created a disturbance, causing the congressman's security team to react. Come on. Put on your big boy gloves already. And is that even a thing? It's something, it goes with the territory. You know, you have to be ready to debate. You have to be ready to defend. You have to be ready to counter. And none of this is happening. In an effort to escort all those involved out of a crowded and loud rally, three people, including the protester, were identified as being involved in the outburst and were escorted out.
Think about our conference. We had dissent there.
Of course.
We had a lot of issues. And you know what? We were pretty tolerant. We were more tolerant. We were criticized more for being tolerant in some cases.
Uh-huh.
And that is not tolerance. That is, oh no, get security quick.
Yeah, yeah.
That's I'm scared.
Not who we want to be.
Good job. Way to go.
Yeah.
That's how distinct we are.
If somebody calls us or somebody talks to us, I want to hear what they have to say.
That was it last week. The caller was like, she was off the phone. We wanted to talk, and it was like, we're unable to actually have a discussion. They just say their piece and hang up.
Yeah, yeah.
C-SPAN's been like that lately.
Has it? C-SPAN?
Yeah, a lot of people just like, oh, yeah, say my piece, and, you know, say their, you know, they get off the...
Well, C-SPAN doesn't really engage the callers. Sometimes they might point out a fact, you know, saying that, well, this really isn't true.
if you're taking time to... They're very good at reading calls, and they can give you a chance to get your preamble and then your question in. But they're very good because they realize that people are different in their delivery. And I'm always keen to listen for when they do cut people off. But, you know, they keep it moving, and that's just it. But the point is, if somebody's onto something, there is that follow-up. And we're just as curious, you know. Sometimes we don't always see and hear things that our listeners are hearing, so...
Continuing with this story, the editor of the Smithtown News, we have a lot of newspapers around here, the editor of the Smithtown News took a photo of the outburst at the Lee Zeldin rally, according to those in attendance, before he was the first journalist to be escorted out. So look at that. You take a picture of an outburst. You do your job. You take a picture of a protester at a rally, and the rally organizers escort you, a member of the media, out. Unbelievable. State Assemblyman Michael Fitzpatrick, a Republican from St. James, said he was close enough to see Zeldin's security team approach both Peretti, the protester, and the reporters, but he could not hear the conversation over the rally, and it was unclear what was unfolding. There was a list of people who were known troublemakers that the security team was on the lookout for, who were known to be trying to get in. Known troublemakers.
Known.
Wow.
That's him.
Two were discovered trying to find their way inside to disrupt the event. However, the assemblyman said the reporters kicked out were not associated with the protester. I did not witness any problem whatsoever by David or Pat. From what I could see, there was no reason for them to be asked to be removed. They were not part of the disruption. When the commotion started, they were obviously paying attention to it as reporters would. You know, I don't know what the rest of your stand on things, Michael Fitzpatrick, state assemblyman, is, but bravo for telling the truth, because that is really all we're asking for. We're asking for people to say truthfully what they believe, what they see, and to answer questions when asked. Sounds like you did all that, and you might be a Republican, but you know what? I'm not going to hold that against you in this particular case. So, yeah, journalists being ejected from Lee Zeldin rallies for doing their job. Sound familiar? That's exactly what happens at Trump rallies. You know, journalists doing their job. They're the enemy of the people.
We need to do the off-white press flak jacket with, like, press in quotations. I think that would be perfect. It's battle time. It's tactical weather.
Now, listen to what Zeldin's staff said afterwards. They said the press failed to appropriately identify themselves to the security team. This is what their communications director said. When asked to leave, the two other people, later identified as the editor of the longtime anti-Zeldin Smithtown News. The anti-Zeldin Smithtown News. Did you know that's what it was called? Yeah, not the failing Smithtown News, but the anti-Zeldin Smithtown. I cannot believe we're seeing this locally.
It's straight out of his playbook. It is all his playbook. And that's why I say it's so transferable in the, like, I know brainwashing is a harsh word, but it's like it fits the mold. It's they're right where they've been molded for this, and it just basically, like, it's a lateral thing of like, oh, you felt that way nationally? Boom, here we go, local.
Well, let me get through this statement. When asked to leave, the two other people, later identified as the editor of the longtime anti-Zeldin Smithtown News and a left-leaning local blogger, did not display those credentials they were provided, almost as if they wanted to get thrown out to write about it afterwards. Following the outburst, they did not contact any members of our team until hours after the event ended. Wow. Okay, so you think, Zeldin Communications Director, that journalists are trying to get thrown out of your rallies so that they can write about it afterwards, because what you're saying isn't interesting enough, isn't outrageous enough to cover on its own merits, that they have to create a scene, even though they weren't part of the scene, they were just next to the person who created a scene, and knowing that that would be enough to get them thrown out. And then they don't contact you until after the rally is over. Like, you would answer the phone, like you would get back to them, like you would be open and honest. Come on. Anyway, Bian Canelio, one of the journalists who was kicked out, and whose name I'm mangling, unfortunately, said she had called and emailed Zeldin's office immediately following the event without response. Not surprised. After making her story public in a Facebook post at approximately 8:30 p.m., she said she was informed several local residents contacted Zeldin's office, and she eventually received an emailed reply asking why she never properly identified herself as being with the press despite alleging she was wearing her press badge. Meanwhile, the Smithtown Matters editor said she has grave concerns about the precedent the event may set for media coverage of the currently ongoing race for the first congressional district, which is getting more and more interesting.
They have to decide, do you want coverage or not? Because if you let the press in, you let them in.
Well, here's your coverage. Here's your coverage. What does it say when only the people given admission again were the people who you think will cover it positively? That's not where the world needs to be today. We have enough people coming after journalists and the integrity of the media in general. So I say one more time to the people in this race, Lee Zeldin, especially, you have to open up to people. You have to answer them. You have to meet with them. And you're not doing any of that. You're not representing the people here. It's really, really disturbing, and it's mini Trump. It's Trump on a local level. We need to get rid of the NRA funding. You know, we need to address the concerns of people locally with regards to Affordable Care Act, the environment, all these things.
What is
that? That is what the job is all about.
Does Zeldin have a day job?
You know, maybe he does. Maybe that's why he's not. I don't know. I don't want to just, you know, attack him, but this is, you know, he's the representative. He has an obligation. And right now, you know, I want to see debates. I want to see debates between Lee Zeldin and Perry Gershon. I want to see that. I want to see how he holds up to being asked questions face to face.
Tough questions on actual platforms.
Yeah, start with simple questions and then tough questions. Whatever, whatever, but let's do it.
Yeah.
And I think there's something scheduled for News 12. I think there's something scheduled from the League of Women Voters. I'm not sure. We'll find out, and we'll give more information as we get it. But this is just one district in one state. I guarantee you, wherever you're listening in the country right now, there is something similar going on. Yeah. If not in your district, close to your district. Pay attention. Get involved. Make sure you register to vote. Because in our case, as we mentioned earlier in the show, the deadline is this Friday coming up. And you can go to vote.org, find out your current status, and register if you're not registered. It's not hard. It's really simple. And that's never been more important than this.
Yeah. And it does just amount to playing games. We're not actually getting anywhere. And having something where you can actually debate and get it out there is, I think, way more productive than just these little like glints of people. Oh, I finally got into this rally and maybe asked a question. You know, it's just that it should not be that hard to face these people, get answers, compare them as the voting public ought to, and then make the decision when it's time.
Hey, in the time we have left, we mentioned this a little bit last week, but I want to talk about it more. We attended a couple of weeks ago one of the marijuana listening sessions, one that took place at Hofstra University. And basically, it's a discussion amongst state officials about the impending legalization of marijuana in New York State. It's going to happen. What the best ways of going about that are. And I was really impressed with the people who were speaking, the citizens of Nassau County, I assume, and maybe other parts of Long Island as well, who really knew their stuff. They knew what marijuana was all about. They know something about other drugs and what to avoid and how this can work safely in protecting children and all of that. And then, of course, we saw the paid lobbyists, the people from the beverage industry, want to take over the whole operation and say, well, we're set up to do this because we've done it with beer and we can do it. You know, people just want to make money off of it. Okay, you know, they're paid to be there. Those are your paid demonstrators if you have to have such a label. But the actual people, hearing them speak, hearing them take time off from their lives to go and address this council, that is where the true inspiration comes from. Even the women from Rockville Center who are all against pot, you know, okay, fine, you all got together in a station wagon and came down and all gave a little speech. But I don't think that represents the majority of people. But still, you know, voice your opinion. It was good to hear. This is happening again next week, a week from today in Suffolk County, right here in Suffolk County, at the Clarion Conference Center, 3845 Veterans Memorial Highway. They scheduled it right opposite our show, so we can't be there. That's okay. 6 to 8 p.m. Suffolk County next Tuesday, October 16th. Kyle, your thoughts on all this?
Well, I had issue with everybody there, mostly because like the people that were pro were kind of telling us things we already knew. And look, you have New York State Health here asking you how you want the adult recreational system to be. Don't sit here and tell us the history of hemp. We get it. We know. It's 2018. The state wants to have a recreational mechanism. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was like silly and kind of a waste, but of course it's support. So why would I be against it? But even the dissent, I felt needed to have a little bit of rationality as well, because it was so hyperbaric and reflexive against and fearful that it also just it was not the practical things. What New York State Health needs, what the whomever issues licenses, what they actually need is the nuts and bolts. You can't have these kinds of billboards. You can't have packaging that's, and this did come up, packaging and appealing to kids, because this actually is very prescient in relation to vaporizing, which is under heavy scrutiny right now.
Not just for pot, but for cigarettes.
General. And the embracing and the marketing to kids. But
all of that aside, the nuts and bolts of it is, you know, how far away from a school can a dispensary be? You know, how, or a recreational store, whatever you're going to call them. How far, you know, what kind of access, what kind of testing standards? That's the stuff New York State needs help with. And it wasn't the lion's share of the conversation. Obviously, like you said, the beverage industry, they want to sell soda. They want to sell, you know, different products and stuff. I say let them stay in their lane. The beverage industry wants to sell THC-infused drinks. That's their lane. But everything else, yeah, it's not really, really something they should be managing.
They didn't win my vote of confidence because they were complaining about how bad their business is going.
That's lame.
They're still upset over recycling.
It's stupid.
They're saying recycling has hurt them. That was from the 1980s. For God's sake, get over it already. You know, let new entrepreneurs, let new business people get involved in this. You can get involved too, but just it's not a beverage, you know, it's something else. But what I was really impressed by was just how everybody was allowed to say their piece. They did not leave until everybody had lined up at the microphones and said something for, I think, 2 minutes each. And hats off to New York State for doing this, because that's how you get feedback. And one thing I learned from all this, the one thing I learned, you know, the concern about kids. Yes, that's a paramount concern. But when you have something that is legal, it becomes regulated. So, you know, a kid can't just waltz into a store and buy pot because he's going to be proofed. Are you under 21? No. Well, then you can't buy it. A dealer on the street, not going to be so strict, you know. Yeah. And as soon as you start legalizing it, it becomes easier to control and more restricted. Yeah, the dealer will still be there, but you're not changing anything. It's not becoming easier for the kid to get their hands on it.
When I was 14, growing up in Washington, during Prohibition, I could get quarter pounds easier than I could get a beer. That is 4 ounces of weed, okay? I could get that no problem when I was 14, 15,
I guarantee
whatever.
A beer would be more harmful to you as well, but I'm not going to get into that.
I'm not joking. And, you know, on up, half pounds, whatever. But the prevalence and the emergence of that was much more available to me under Prohibition and attainable. Because, you know, there were ID checks when you went to a convenience store. Son, you don't look 18. You don't look 20. You don't look 21 at all, you know. So you would be turned away. However, the black market itself is completely unregulated. And to your point, I mean, if you create a situation where that is the only place where there is access, there is not safe access. Those dealers are just making money, and they do not care how old your little foofy is.
Foofy?
Whatever. I don't know what your kid's name is.
A poodle buying drugs?
Steffi or you know, little Bobby.
Uh-huh.
You know, they are going to sell to who they're going to sell to. And guess what? They might have Coke, too.
Yeah.
So and then, you know, little Bobby's, you know, trying to be a hustler,
you know,
all of a sudden, oh, why don't you make some coke money here?
Okay, that speaks to a concern a lot of people had about pot being a gateway drug. Pot is not a gateway drug for users. Pot may be a gateway drug for dealers because they get involved in all kinds of other dealing, but it's not something that you smoke a joint and all of a sudden you want to do a line of coke. That's not how it works. And, you know, I think that's something that needs to be put to rest. And a lot of people seem to have that false assumption. It has not been proven. So much more harm comes from drinking alcohol and doing something afterwards than having pot. No one has ever overdosed on pot. You know, it's not good for kids. Nobody is saying that it is, but it's being demonized. And one thing I would have said had I said something in that hearing is that if we were discussing potentially legalizing alcohol. Let's say alcohol was not legal right now, or cigarettes. We'd be saying far worse things than we're saying right now about the dangers of pot. You know, those things are so much more dangerous, and we don't think twice about the fact that they're legal.
Yeah, and my point is not to be totally like fear-mongering about this, but the when it is a black market or a gray market, it's completely unregulated, the likelihood that a dealer is going to diversify away from
you know, cannabis and also sell mushrooms or acid or coke or ecstasy is higher. So if you deflate that and diversify, in other words, add value, add products, and add an array, like a selection, the black market and the gray market can't do that. Those dealers are buying wholesale. They're going to buy a pound of this or a pound of that or whatever they can cop, okay? But the dispensaries are vertical, and they have a wide selection. You're talking about medicinal quality. You're talking about different strains, different – I mean, really getting into the granularity of cannabis and the technology around that and other products just will expand exponentially. So you get more selection. That variety alone totally takes away from the black market, because – people get sick of smoking just X brand, you know, and if that's all dude has, they get sick of it. But the recreational side offering all these different things, all these different ways to consume the product or cook or whatever, it is way more valuable to the average consumer and completely eliminates the other forms of diversity that a black or gray market dealer might have. Might. I'm not saying always. I'm just saying they're not going to have the oversight. They're not going to be geared towards that. They're just geared towards whatever hustle is making them the most money. So the other point, the last point I wanted to make, and the one comment I made directly to New York State Health, they had submission forms. I didn't actually stand up. But my advice was keep the licenses affordable, because what you're going to do is attract a lot of big business and a lot of big entities. And I looked at the distiller permits in New York. If I'm manufacturing alcohol in New York State, or if I'm even industrial alcohol or denatured alcohol, which is non-consumable or whatever, those licenses are like anywhere from like $29,000 to $50,000 just to be certified as a distiller in New York or whatever. So I'm not saying that's what it's going to be, but keep those licenses very affordable, because if only entities that have $50,000 for a license are the players, you're only going to get big business. And you need to support local growers. You need to support it like the local food movement. And compliance itself, having security cameras, having all the build out, the grow room, everything, that is all very costly. So, you know, $500 to $1,000 is fair for a cannabis license.
All right. Again, that last hearing in Suffolk County. Actually, there are more hearings throughout the state. You can look up online. But the one in Suffolk County next Tuesday, October 16th, 6 to 8 p.m., Clarion Conference Center, 3845 Veterans Memorial Highway in Ronkonkoma. The Crystal Ballroom, I'm told, is where it is. So that'll be an event, and we'll certainly let people know if we hear anything back from others. And that's going to do it for us. You can write to us here at Off the Wall, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you regarding anything that we've talked about tonight or anything that you just wish to talk about. It's it would have been the 78th birthday of John Lennon today. It's been 38 years since we've lost him, 2 years shy of the number of years that he was on this planet. So think about that. That's really pretty incredible. And think about that as you hear this song on our way out. Good night.
I think the piano maybe is better. I just realized to stop struggling. Hello? Yoko? Yeah. Well, it's long. Top with his long, long
have to ride the well long, long, long gone.
Mao, I'm defunct. That's one of the problems.